And welcome back
to Behind the Crime.
I'm Ella Calora.
And I'm Rebecca Wood. And this is our 18th episode.
Yay.
Oh.
What?
It was silly.
Let me be excited.
Okay.
So today we have a kind of snowy theme. This is coming out in January, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't make me second guess myself.
I'm sorry. Yes, because we sorry, we're recording three episodes in one day, so we're a little silly.
Anyway, anywho. So we have a little snowy theme.
We don't know what we're calling this episode yet, so you'll find out later. Well, you already know.
Sinister snow. No, we can't use sinister again.
We did sinister spring break.
Slippery snow? Is slippery like a bad word?
What do you
like,
mean?
Like, can it be used as a bad word?
Like, negative?
Like, you're slippery.
No?
You're a little slippery today, Rebecca. I'm going to tell Abby
I think
that.
You're thinking, like, slithery.
No.
You're slithery.
No.
Like a
slippery
snake.
When I get back, I'm going to be like, Abigail, you're a little slippery today.
Oh my gosh.
She's going to be like, what is wrong with you?
Anyways, we'll figure out what we're calling this. You guys already know what we're calling this. So good job, guys. Anyways.
Keep up the good work.
So true. We're doing two different cases. They're not like murder so much as the rest of our episodes are. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, there is like crime involved in both of them a little bit. Yours more so than mine.
Yeah. I got a conviction, baby. We're cutting that out.
Oh, so now it's a competition. Okay, Becky's going first.
Yes, I am. So I'm talking about a 14-year-old boy named Kieran Brooks who died on a ski lift in France. He was from England, and he went to Torquay Boys Grammar School, which is in England. And he apparently was one of the brightest students in math in the entire country, like in all of the UK. He scored a 96% on a national math test, which is obviously very good. His dream job was to be a doctor so that he could help people. My poor king. And he was also enrolled in the Army Cadets.
Remind me how old he is again?
14.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He loved sports and the outdoors, so going on this ski trip was really exciting for him. It was his first ski trip, too. He was on a school trip to France in February of 2011 is when this happened, and it was his first time ever skiing, first time on a ski trip. And he was with some of his teachers and his classmates, and it was basically their, like, halfway through the semester break. He was riding a ski lift at Châtel in the French-Swiss border, and his backpack straps that he had on his back got tangled with the mechanism of the ski lift, and that ended up causing him to be suspended in the air for 4 minutes before he was released from the ski lift. Charlotte Pitocho was a teacher who was supervising the trip, and she actually got onto the ski lift after Brooks, like a few seats behind him, and didn't know anything was wrong for a while. She only knew something was wrong when the ski lift eventually came to a stop and sirens started going off, and she saw someone dangling 50 feet above the ground from a chair on the ski lift, but she didn't know who the person was. Like, she didn't know it was one of her students. She saw Brooks, not knowing it was him again. She saw him kicking and screaming, but couldn't make out what he was saying. He still had his helmet on, but his skis had fallen off of the ski lift fairly quickly. So he, very shortly after being kind of thrown from the thing, but being held by his backpack, he became unconscious. And his teacher described him as looking like a doll. Because his body looked lifeless, basically. Mm. So students say that there were a lot of small signs, not even a lot, there were small signs that said not to have backpacks on their backs, although they call it rucksacks, because they're English, they're silly, and to have them on their front or next to them on the ski lift, but not on their backs. But they also said that they weren't explicitly told that by any employees, and that none of the employees or instructors enforced that rule. So there was kind of an issue of that, where maybe if they had bigger signs or someone said something to him before getting on, he wouldn't have, that wouldn't have happened, you know? So after he was finally released from the lift, after being dangling for 4 minutes, people did attempt to revive him for 8 minutes, by performing CPR on him. And then he was taken to a hospital. He was flown by a helicopter and eventually was transferred back to the UK. But ultimately, a month later, on March 17th, he died in the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital because he just had too much brain damage. That was the like big issue while he was in the hospital, is he had brain damage,
mm-hmm.
Very severely. So Richard Sator, who was 50 years old, was operating the ski lift, and he was in charge of safety for the lift on that day. Like, that was his role. And basically, it was found that he was not at his post at the time that Brooks was dangling from the ski lift. And he, two different articles said two different things. So he was either cleaning tools in his hut or he was looking at a worksheet. We don't know which one is true or if either of them are true. We could have, you know, been sitting there on his phone, you know. Not to imply that he was. Maybe he was working, but either way, he should have been at his post, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He also reportedly ignored and didn't respond to skiers who were shouting at him to press the emergency off button. He said that he did hear some of them, but he didn't know what they were saying or what was wrong because they weren't speaking French. They were speaking English. And this was obviously in France. But I feel like even you can still get the vibe of what someone is screaming when they're screaming. Yeah. And you're in charge of safety. Like, I feel like the safest thing to do would just be push the off button and then figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like pushing the off button is going to hurt somebody. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he said he didn't respond to them because he didn't know what they were saying, and that's why he took so long to react. But he did eventually hit the emergency off button, which is when, you know, Charlotte Petocho, who was his teacher, noticed that something was wrong because of the sirens. He was charged and convicted for involuntary manslaughter and was sentenced to a 6-month jail sentence, but it was suspended. Additionally, SAEM Sports, which is the company that operates the lift and like manufactured it, was also accused of involuntary manslaughter, but they weren't convicted. There wasn't enough to hold them accountable because Richard Sator wasn't doing his job the way that he was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if he was where he had been, then he would have been, I guess, safer. And also, it's kind of on the resort for not being stricter about their protocols on having backpacks on their backs, as well as a little bit on the teachers, because maybe they should have been enforcing that a little bit better.
Yeah.
Considering
that, I think there's a lot of people that could.
There's so many people that can take some blame for this. And, like, he was 14. He was young. He wasn't thinking anything. He was just excited to go skiing for the first time because he loved, like, outdoor sports like this.
Yeah.
Brooke's parents were quoted saying that they don't feel that justice was served because they're satisfied that someone was held accountable for their son's death, but they feel that the incident highlights failings within the industry that went further than just the inattention of the one staff member who was Richard Sator.
Yeah.
Basically, they feel like he shouldn't be the only one being held accountable, and that just having him get a 6-month jail sentence, that's not actually changing anything and doing anything to prevent this from happening in the future.
Yeah, like, did the resort have to then, like, make sure they put up signs? Did they, like, have stricter rules about staying at your post? What was done to prevent it from happening?
Great question. They also, the couple, advocated for widespread improvements in the industry in general so that something like this never happens again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even just at this one resort, but at all of them in general. Because I'm sure there's a lot of similar problems where they don't really educate, especially young kids. They don't explain to them why it is such a serious thing that you shouldn't have your backpack on your back when you're getting on the ski lift.
Well, and a couple other things, too. I mean, how many different skiing accidents or snowboarding accidents happen a year?
Oh, yeah. And deaths, too. Like, obviously, it's, like, a pretty dangerous sport, like, in general.
But so many people who aren't professionals and who have never done it before get up on the mountain every year.
Not me.
And, like, I have a big resort where I live. And, I mean, it's a part of the issue there is the crowds. Like,
yeah.
There will be so many people on the mountain, and it becomes very dangerous.
And so many families, like, with kids. The most I ever did was go snow tubing, and I was, like, 9, and I absolutely hated it. I was like, I don't like the feeling of falling, mm-hmm. so why do I want to have the feeling of falling and be cold? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, they basically reported that the resort operator, not Richard Sator, but the person who, like, runs the resort, expressed, like, a lot of guilt that he was feeling and apologized for the failings, like, on behalf of the resort, mm-hmm. which they found some comfort in, which is good.
Yeah.
But they also said that they don't want their son's death to be a deterrent for others from participating in skiing because, like, it was something that he was really excited about doing and he was really passionate about the outdoors and sports. But that they just want this to kind of be a little bit of a warning so that people can be aware of the risks before they mm-hmm. involve themselves in it.
Yeah.
I have two quotes from his parents as well. The first one is, "We couldn't bury Kieran for 6 months because of the police investigation. We also couldn't donate his organs, which was something that would have given us some comfort."
Why couldn't they?
I'm guessing because he wasn't pronounced dead for a month. I'm sure there was some damage or weakness from the brain injury while he was in the hospital. And then also the fact that they couldn't do anything with the body for 6 months. It could have just been like you can't really wait 6 months and then donate organs at that point because they're just not going to work.
They're not viable.
Yeah. So that's obviously, like, really upsetting that his family had to wait 6 months before they could kind of put him to rest, which is for a lot of families, that's, like, a big point of closure. So they had to wait very, very long.
Yeah, that is a really long time.
Another quote is, "More has to be done to stop such a thing ever happening again. We have had to live through this every day since the accident. We just want our son and our lives back, but I know I can't have that." Which his father said. Which is so sad. Like, when things like this happen, it's just all you want is for it to go away, for things to go back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
But it never will go back to normal. Even when, you know, you start healing, you start feeling a little bit better, it's still never going to be the same because you're still not going to get your son back or your family member. And I think part of it, which is why I kind of talked about him in the beginning and, like, just his personality, is, like, he had so much potential. And, like, he, at such a young age, like, knew what he wanted to do and was very passionate about it. So the fact that, you know, his life was taken from him just by, like, carelessness, really. And, like, again, I'm sure Richard Sator obviously didn't mean for this to happen, would never have wanted this to happen, and I'm sure feels guilty about it, but it's like he was being careless, and that's mm-hmm. what caused this young kid to die.
Yeah.
And has caused his family so much trauma that you can really never fully heal from. But that's pretty much my case. So I guess that brings us to your case, Ella.
Okay, so my case is about Mount Everest. So before I get into the specific case that I'm going to talk about, I'm just going to talk about Mount Everest a little bit. So Currently, Mount Everest has had over 310 deaths since the early 90s when people started going up.
Mm-hmm.
Many bodies litter the mountain because it is very dangerous to remove them. It is possible they have removed people's bodies, but a lot of them still litter the mountain to this day because they just can't get them off safely.
Yeah.
Which is very upsetting. I'm sure, like, families that have had people die on Mount Everest, that's probably just devastating that they can't have their bodies.
Yeah. Because that, like, being able to bury that loved one, like I said in my case, is, like, a point of closure for so many people.
Yeah.
And they just will never get that. I need to stop hitting my mic. I'm so sorry.
So,
I'll be over here.
2023 has actually been one of the deadliest years. There has been 12 deaths and currently 5 missing. So 2014 has been the most deadliest year with 16 people dead.
Mm-hmm.
But if the 5 turn up to be dead from 2023,
yeah,
then 2023 will become the most deadliest year. And since they have been missing for so long, chances are, unfortunately, they have passed away. So that would make 2023 the most deadliest year. So most of these deaths occur from altitude sickness and also cerebral edema.
Yeah.
Not sure how to exactly pronounce that. But that comes from being at a high altitude. Everest is 29,029 feet. Cerebral edema is when the brain starts swelling from the high altitude. Other symptoms are confusion, memory loss, and hallucinations.
Which is probably so scary to experience just in general, but also like while you're on Mount Everest. Like, yeah, that has to be terrifying.
Yeah. So all of that being said, the case that I'm actually going to talk about is from May of 2004. Just in case people don't know, the hiking season for Everest does occur during what, if you, depending on where you live, but for us, where we live, May is obviously spring, but where Everest is, that is, like, the springtime is the good hiking season. So in case anyone was confused about that. So 64-year-old pathologist from Virginia, Niles Entesna, hired guide Gustavo Lissi. I'm going to assume that's how you pronounce it. L-I-S-I. Lissi?
Yeah.
From Argentina. So there is, before I forget to say this, there is a book about this incident by Michael Kodas. It's called High Crimes. I think he also discusses other things, other crimes, but this, he does discuss this one. So the two men, Niles, I'm not going to call him by his last name because I can't pronounce it. So Niles and then Gustavo, the guide that he hired, did make it to the summit via the southeast ridge. On the way down, however, Niles became very disoriented and was possibly suffering from an onset of cerebral edema. Mm-hmm. He collapsed near the balcony, is what it's called, which is several hundred feet above Camp 4, which is the highest camp on Everest. Two other Sherpas plus Gustavo tried to revive him, but eventually left him there. He wasn't dead. He was not dead yet. They wound up leaving him there and continued to the camp. When they got to the camp, Gustavo failed to tell anyone about his client's condition.
Bruh.
And he later claimed that he was dead tired and forgot.
What do you mean you forgot?
Anyone.
That makes no sense.
So eventually he did tell people about Niles. People didn't go up until the next morning.
Yeah.
And when they got to the ridge, Niles was gone. he had disappeared. People think that he had fallen off the ridge, which means that he was, in fact, still alive when they left him, and somehow he wound up falling off the ridge. So Gustavo fell under a lot of scrutiny and was actually investigated after this.
Mm-hmm.
Niall's family were the ones to open the investigation or have the investigation opened. And this was also the first instance in Everest history where the accusations went from mere negligence to criminal behavior. So, as I said, Niall's family did have an investigation opened, but it kind of just didn't go anywhere and faded out, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But Gustavo's reputation was ruined, and he kind of just was never hired again, thankfully. Well,
yeah.
David Morton, a guide at the time that this was going on, it was actually his first job that he was hired for. He was going to go up with two other guides, 8 clients, and 20 Sherpas. He was at Camp 2 when he saw Gustavo, who had recently left his client to die.
Oh.
Morton said that Gustavo, he first saw him in a tent, and he was expressing some concern for his client, but then later was lamenting the incident, but then was showing photos of the summit, saying, it's so beautiful up there.
Oh.
And kind of went from, I just left my client up there and he's probably dead, to, look at how beautiful it is up there. Like, look at these pictures that I took.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Niall and Tesna's body was never found. Again, he was 64 years old. People think that likely he fell off the ridge and that's why they couldn't find his body. And Gustavo was never held accountable for leaving him up there. And this is a difficult case because it is so dangerous to get bodies off of Everest. It has been done, but they send like 20 Sherpas up there to just get one body.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it's very difficult to get them down. So it isn't Gustavo's fault that he couldn't get him down, but it is his fault that he failed to tell anyone about Niall's condition when he got to the camp. Because if he had told people as soon as he got to the camp, there would have been a chance that they could have sent people up there. They could have gotten him better, so he could have Niles could have made his way down, or they could have sent people up there to carry his body down and either keep him alive, or if he had already passed away, maybe they could have at least had his body.
Yeah, it's also, there's also just the matter of his, like, weird behavior of being like, look at these cool pictures, like, this guy died, but, like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just feel like there's not an explanation for that.
Yeah. You know? So, that's my whole case. Kind of 2 short ones, but, and not really, mine isn't really, like, a crime, but it was almost considered.
Well, it's also very unique that it was, like, the first time that that has ever, like, criminal intent has ever been, like, proposed for a Mount Everest death.
Yeah, because, like I said in the beginning of this, hundreds of people have died on Everest, but usually it's
just accidents.
No one's fault. Avalanches have happened. People get sick up there.
Yeah.
People fall off of, like, certain parts like cliffs or ridges of the mountain, but this one was kind of unique in the way that there was an investigation opened for a little bit into Gustavo. Nothing came out of it.
I also think it's just very, like, good for us to talk about, because I don't think that, like, the ski lift accident that I talked about and Mount Everest deaths really get covered a lot in podcasts.
No, it was very hard to, like, find more information about this. Like, The information that I found from David Morton about, like, he just happened to be there and see Gustavo, but there wasn't any, there wasn't many other accounts about this situation or how Gustavo acted after the fact or really anything else.
Yeah. I mean, I just like when we do case, like, do episodes that are a bit different or just individual cases, like our motor vehicle mishaps case, like mine was a crime, but yours wasn't, but it, you know, caused new, like, laws to be made. So I don't know. I just find it interesting when we look at stuff, because it's not necessarily something that you and I would look into on our own in general anyway. So it's kind of like exposing us to something different that we wouldn't necessarily have looked at otherwise.
Yeah.
And these are still people who are not necessarily victims of a crime, but they're still victims that like deserve, you know, the attention.
Yeah. To be remembered.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that wraps up this episode. I know.
Such a short episode, but.
With that being said, whatever winter activities you are participating in this season, stay safe.
And I have to say, please don't try to climb Mount Everest. Like, I just.
Unless you are really experienced, but I mean, I looked at a lot of cases about deaths on Mount Everest, and even very, very experienced hikers.
It's just so unpredictable.
Who have, like, in the one case that I saw, they had climbed Mount Everest twice before, and on their third one, an avalanche happened, and they were covered in snow, and there's nothing they could have really done to prevent that.
It's just unpredictable, like I said. Yeah. I just feel like it's not worth it. But I guess I've never had an inclination to climb
Unless
Mount Everest.
You are really experienced and also young. Like, I don't want to...
Like, this guy was in his 60s.
Yeah, that's probably why he got sick. Because you have to be very young. Well, not very young. You have to be very healthy. Like, very healthy, very fit, and experienced. Because otherwise, bad things are going to happen. And that's a lot of the issue of why these deaths keep happening. And because it's very, like, overpopulated. Like, I was reading about how 2023 has been a really bad year. And it's because of the crowds. Because that makes the trails slippery. Because the snow gets compacted down. And then it basically, like, turns into, like, a sheet of ice. And it's a lot more dangerous. So, please stay safe. Whatever winter activities, even if you're just going ice skating.
Yeah.
Stay safe. If you're going skiing, snowboarding. Snow tubing. If you're just taking a winter stroll in the woods.
Or even down your street. Like, ice, or black driving. Ice is crazy.
Yeah, driving, stay safe.
Let us know if you liked this episode. I know it was a lot different than most of our other episodes. So if you didn't like it, let us know and then we won't do it again. But if you did, then let us know and maybe we'll do stuff similar.
Yeah. And follow us on Instagram.
@behind_thecrime.
And on Facebook.
Just Behind the Crime.
And follow us on our website.
Which you can get to using the links in our bios on Facebook and Instagram.
And possibly on YouTube soon. Maybe at this point we will.
We'll let you know.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.